Hello and welcome to OU's Nach Yomi. You can find this year posted at ouradio.org/nach or on my website, ericlevy.com, under the recording section. My name is Rabbi Eric Levy, and I'm happy to bring you Yeshayahu chapter 29, Chaf Tet. Hoi, Ariel, Ariel, Kiryat Chana, David, Sifu Shana al Shana, Chagim Yin Kofu, a continuation of the Hoys. Yeshayahu calls out to Jerusalem, Oi, Ariel, Ariel, the city where David camped, add on 1 year, then add on another as the holidays cycle around, from the word Yikof, or Hakafa. Ariel is a name for Yerushalayim. In Sefer Yechezkel, we find that it's also the name of the base of the sacrificial altar, which is in the temple's courtyard. And perhaps Jerusalem is called Ariel after this distinctive feature. Perhaps Ariel is also a reference to Yehuda's symbol, Judah's symbol, the lion, so the city becomes the lion of God. Ariel is also the name for two mighty warriors of Moab who were killed, so it could be that the word El at the end of Ariel just means powerful like God, so Ariel becomes the mighty lions, or the mighty lion. However, I think the reference here is symbolic, that there's a metaphor here. It's a reference to how the altar, which was in the courtyard of the temple, was surrounded by sacrifices, much like Yerushalayim will be surrounded by Assyrian forces who will work their way up nearly to the Temple Mount itself, to the Ta'alat Brecha HaElyonah, or the Moat of the Upper Baths in their doomed assault on Yerushalayim. Ariel in Yechezkel is also related to the Har-El in Yechezkel, Ariel Har-El, which means the Mountain of God, because as we will see, that will be almost all that is left of Yerushalayim. And in fact, all that is left of the nation of Yehuda will be that pretty much that single mountain of God before God miraculously destroys the Assyrian forces of Sanherib. The year-to-year reference, Shana l'Shana, can be an indication that there may be only 2 years left before the Assyrian forces arrive, which puts this prophecy then in approximately 702, 703, 704, BCE. The psukim continue. Vahaki vahatzikoti la Ariel vahayata ta'aniya va'aniya vahayata li ka Ariel. And I will harass Ariel, and she will be in sorrow upon sorrow. Notice those words ta'aniya va'aniya are actually borrowed from by the prophet Yirmiyahu in his Megillat Eicha. And she will come to me vahayata li. She will be to me as an Ariel. I think that the sense is not that I will treat it as a lion in punishment, but that the only thing that will be left after the sorrow and harassment of the Assyrian troops will be the Ariel, the Har-El, the Mountain of God, where the temple and the altar sits. V'chaniti chadur alayich, v'tzarti alayich mutzav, v'hakimoti alayich mitzurot. And in a turnaround from when David encamped there, I will encamp around you. You is in the feminine because God is talking to the city, Ariel herself. I will encamp abound around you, roundabout, all around. And I will besiege you with military posts, and I will raise up fortifications against you. Of course, God is referring to the Assyrian forces that will act in his stead. It's not that he will be encamping, but he will cause the Assyrian forces to come and besiege Jerusalem, besiege Ariel. V'shafalt me'eretz tidaberi u'me'afar tishach imratech v'hayach he'ov me'eretz kolech u'me'afar imratech titzaf tsef. And your speech will be lower than the earth, and your words will be brought low. Your voice will come like the dead from the earth, and from the dirt your words will chirp. Now, most commentaries read this as quite negative, that is, Israel will be brought low, her voices will be brought low. That is, from the harassment and the siege of the voice of the city will be nearly wiped out. However, I'm going to go out on a limb here and suggest that Yeshayahu is actually giving good advice to the nation. That is, when Asher comes, not to speak to it if it wants to survive. That is, I guarantee you Asher will come, and if you want to know how to deal with it, don't say a word. Now, I'm basing my interpretation of this prophecy on what actually happens. Asher, as you'll find out in a few chapters, Asher sent messengers. mainly Rav Shakeh, the officer of the wines, who was a major military player, and apparently a Judean turncoat, a Jew who turned sides to Asher, tried to incite a rebellion against the city, against Chizkiyahu. That is, he goes to the city and he says, Chizkiyahu is not going to be able to save you, so kill him and make peace with me, and then everything will be okay. Now, while Shevna is on the verge of cracking, Chizkiyahu commands everybody in the city to shut up, to be silent, and not respond to this psychological warfare. And the people listen, so Chizkiyahu wins that round. This forces Ashur to commit a full battle against Jerusalem, and that's where God miraculously wipes out the Assyrian forces. I think this interpretation works well with the next verse. Also, it's nice that instead of the prophecy always condemning the Jewish people, the prophet is actually saying, I'll give you the key to survival from the troubles that are coming. Anyway, in the next verse, which, as I said, fits into what I believe is the correct interpretation that the Jews should be silent in order to survive, it reads, V'haya ke'avak dak hamon zarecha uchmotz over hamon aritzim v'haya lefeta pit'om. And your strangers, i.e. the enemy forces, Ashur, will be like fine dust, and the multitude oppressors will be like wafting chaff, and all this will come suddenly. This is surely prophesizing the sudden miraculous destruction of the Assyrian siege. Me'im Adonai tzivaot tipaked beram uvarash v'kol gadol sufa usara v'lahav eish ochla. Now the tough of tipaked beram uvarash can either be you Ashur will be nifkad, or she, the city, will be nifkad. So, either from the Lord of hosts, she, Jerusalem, will be remembered, i.e. saved, or you, the enemy, will be visited upon with thunder and earthquakes and clamorous noise, storm and torrent and blazes of consuming fire. This is very messianic. But as I've mentioned before, Chizkiyahu could have been the Mashiach, according to the rabbis, and the truth is, according to the text, everything seems very messianic, except for the fact that he, or his nation, or both, were not quite ready or quite worthy for that level of redemption. V'haya kachalom chazon laila hamon kol hagoyim hatzovim al Ariel v'chol tzoveha tzodatah v'hametzikim la. And then the multitudes warring on Ariel, or Harel, the mountain of God. It says Ariel, but I think the implication here is, as I said before, it indicates the mountain of God. With their wars and their fortifications and those who are harassing her, will be like a night vision. V'aya kasher yachalom hara'ev hine ochel v'hekitz v'reka nafsho v'kasher yachalom atzameh v'hine shokte v'hekitz v'hine ayev v'nafsho shokeka keni yehamon kol agoyim atzovim al har tzion. What kind of night vision? Like a hungry man who dreams of food and then wakes up only to find himself hungry. And like a thirsty person who dreams of drinking, only to wake up exhausted, finding himself thirsty. That's how the multitudes of nations who are warring against Mount Zion will be. No doubt Asher's forces, by the way, are joined by these opportunistic neighboring nations, perhaps former allies who turn against Judah in her time of need. And that's what it means, kol agoyim hatzovim al har tzion. Not just Ashur, but the opportunistic people coming to attack. Now, if you remember from the last chapter, Yeshayahu was in a dispute with the Moshelei Ha'am, who are both the ruling class, though not likely King Chizkiyahu himself, as well as the intelligentsia, the noblemen, able to spin mishalim, parables and metaphors to justify and explain their policies. They are making treaties with Egypt, which we're not going to see too much of directly in this chapter, but in next chapter, the whole issue with the treaties with Egypt is going to really come front and center. And Yeshayahu wants them to stop with these treaties and just simply believe in God's salvation, to be quiet, hamargeya, to be relaxed. So he turns, mocking them for pretending that his prophecies are for children. Do you remember the kav l'kav, tzav l'tzav of last chapter? And he says, hitmahmehu utmahu. Hishta'a shi'u v'sho'u, shachru v'lo yayin, na'u v'lo shechar. Act stupid and be stupefied. Act blind and be blinded. That is, be willfully blind, if you're willfully blind, which is what they were being, you'll find that it becomes reflexive and internalized. Now, notice in the middle of the pasuk, we switch from first person, second person, where he's talking directly to those people, to third person, where he's talking about them. Quote, they are drunk, shacharu, but not with wine. They stagger, but not from liquor, na'u v'lo shechar. It seems that Yeshayahu is now talking about them, not to them. So, in that case, these words, the second half of the pasuk, and now the psukim that come afterwards, the verses that come afterwards, may actually be directed at the populace, the hoi polloi, explaining to them why their leaders are, in fact, leading them astray. Note, these leaders are the same ones in the previous chapter, which you can tell because these are the same quote-unquote drunks from the previous chapter who treated the Navi's words as if he were some kind of kindergarten teacher. The prophet says, you think that's wine and liquor befuddling your good senses? No, 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 no. Ki nasach aleichem Adonai ruach tardema v'ya'atzeim et eneichem et anvi'im v'et rasheichem achozim kisa. Indeed, the Lord has spread a spirit of deep slumber over you, and he has closed your eyes, and he has covered the eyes of the prophets and of your leaders, the seers. Again, I think Yeshayahu is talking to the average citizen at this time about the leaders whom he was castigating in the previous chapter. He calls them seers, perhaps in contrast with prophets, that he says the prophets can't see and the seers can't see. So who are the seers? The ones who pretend that they have some vision of the future. But in fact, they are really ineffectual and incapable. Vatehi lachem chazuta kol kedivrei ha-sefer hechatum ashe yitnu oto el yodei ha-sefer leimor kirana et zeh, kirana zeh. And every vision that you will see will be like a sealed scroll, which will be given to someone who knows how to read, saying, read this now. But he'll say, I can't because it's sealed. The idea is that the prophets and visionaries, remember there were two people that were criticized in the previous pasuk of not being able to see because God's darkening spirit upon them or placed a darkness upon them. One were the Nevi'im and one were the Chozim. So first he deals with the Nevi'im. These prophets and visionaries will not be able to decipher the prophecies. That is, they could read, but the book is sealed, and therefore they cannot envision the correct future, except for Yeshayahu. For prophets, this is very much like Sefer Daniel, who saw the future, but he was not able to interpret it without help from an angel. Zechariah also runs into a similar lack of clarity in chapter 4 of his book, Sefer Zechariah. So now the prophets fail, to whom will you go next? Perhaps this next verse refers to the seers, Chozim Rasheichem, your visionary leaders who are in fact no seers at all. Minitana Sefer al Asher lo yada Sefer lemor Karana atzeh. Vamar lo yadati sefer, and then the book will be given to ones who don't know how to read, saying, read this now. But he'll say, I don't know how to read. And why has all this darkness, this lack of vision transpired? Vayomer Adonai yan kimi gash ha'am hazeh befiv uvi svatav kibeduni v'libo richak mimeni v'tehi ratamoti mitzvat anashim melumada. And the Lord said, since when this nation approaches me, they honor me with their mouths and lips, but they distance their minds from me, and their fear of me is the rote actions of someone else's commandments to them. What does that mean? Since they distance their minds from me, the consequence is that it will become exponentially more difficult to comprehend my ways. Please notice that I translated the word v'libo richak mimeni, as they distance their minds from me, not their hearts. The prophets, at the time of the prophets, and the truth is up until reasonably modern times, people thought that the seat of intelligence was in the lave, in the heart. So that's how they translate God's prophecy to the nation. They have to speak in a language that everybody can understand. So it's not that their hearts were not into their actions on the Temple Mount, in the modern sense of they weren't feeling love and they weren't completely joyful. And God forbid that it's a sin of this nature to have a hard time with putting one's full emotion into the service of God. That's not why God is saying that they've removed themselves from him. Rather, it's the mind that's a problem here, not the heart. There's a real kavana problem, not like we call kavana today, but actually the more modern Israeli term kavana, which is direction, aim. That is, the worshiper is there, but he's specifically shooting to miss. He does not want to involve God. He's doing things on rote, but he's keeping his mind off of the target. Note that it doesn't say that your minds, by the way, were far from me. V'libo rachak mimeni. Richak is in the PL, which is the causative tense. They caused their minds to be far from God. It was intentional, even while they were doing service to him. This brings back Yeshayahu's chapter 1 prophecies that the people came to the temple, but they did not really do what God wanted them to do. Lachein hini yosif lahafli et ha'am hazeh haflei vafela. Therefore, I will add wonder on top of wonder on top of wonder to this nation. Wonder here is not in the positive sense at all. Rather, God's actions will become more and more inaccessible to them. Ve'avda chochmat chachamav uvinat nivonav tistatar. Wisdom will be lost from the wise and intelligence hidden from the intelligent. You can't understand me because you deliberately avoid bringing me into your minds. That conversation is directed kind of to both of them, to both the leaders of the people, as well as the hoi polloi who are acting without really bringing God into their service. And now the Navi really seems to be addressing everybody, the politicos with their plots and the people with their superficial dedications. Hoi, hama amikima me adonai lastir etza. Oy, those, or you, who hide plans to secret them away from God, who do their deeds in darkness and say, no one will see us, no one will find us out. As I said, this works well for the double dealers, the politicians, as well as the hoi polloi, whose actions are in the right place, but whose intentions are definitely not. In the next verse, we have the word hafkechem, which is a challenging word, from the word lahafoch, to turn over. Maybe it means your plots or your tricks, or maybe it means the truth is the opposite, hafuch, of what you think. And what they wrongly think is now explained. Im kechomer hayotzer yechashev, ki omar ma'aseh lo oseu lo asani v'yetzer amar li yotzero lo hivin. Do you really think that the product of the artisan is what counts? That a product says to its producer, you didn't make me. That an art says to its, a piece of art says to its artisan, you can't understand me, i.e. you think that God doesn't know what you're up to? He made you. Halo od me'at mizar v'shav levanon la'karmel v'ha'karmel la'ya'ar yechashev. Indeed, in just a little while, the Lebanon will turn into farmland, and the farmland will be fashioned into a forest. Now, Radak sees this difficult metaphor as applying to the social injustices from chapter 1. Even though Radak places chapter 1 during the times of Chizkiyahu, and this chapter he places in Ahaz's time, which is Chizkiyahu's father, nonetheless, he sees that there's a parallel between this chapter and the first chapter, that is, God will take all of the high and mighty and lay them low, and God will take the low and bring them up to be mighty. According to the Radak, the sense is that God will turn things over. The word hafcho, which means his plan, rather than hafkechem, your plans. And the mighty cedars of Lebanon represent the prideful powers that be. They will be turned into rich farmland, which represent the oppressed masses who can't get justice. And the rich farmland will be turned into the cedars of Lebanon, or as the Pasuk says, Ya'ar, a forest. Now, this fits very nicely. The Radak's interpretation fits very nicely with the downtrodden and the poor that will be described as coming into their own and happiness in the coming verses. However, it's possible to say that this verse is not metaphoric, that it's actually quite literal. What are the torn down cedars of Lebanon? They are literally the torn down cedars of Lebanon. A description of what will happen to the landscape of the Levant, of the western Mediterranean coast of Syria and Israel, when Ashur comes to knock down all those trees and turning them into mechanisms of war. And then he turns the productive farmland of Israel into unproductive and abandoned yar, or a forest. And that's, he's the word yar not as a positive thing, but as even a more negative thing, a thing which is lower than productive farmland. V'shamu v'yomahu acherishim divrei sefer ume ofel ume choshech enei ivrim tirena. So on that day, which I'm interpreting as the literal day when the forests of Lebanon are brought down and your lands are scorched and turned from farmland that produces to abandoned forest that does not, on that day the deaf, and here I think it means those who deafen themselves, who refuse to listen to Yeshayahu, will hear and they'll understand the words of the book. That is the sealed book, which was mentioned a few psukim above. That sealed book will be unsealed. And from out of darkness and gloom, the eyes of the blind will see, which means it's going to take Usher to come to open up everybody's eyes and show what they're doing wrong. The intelligentsia and the nobles, that they are rebelling against God by making their own plots against his will. And the hoi polloi, who is behaving in ways which are unjust and unkind, as described in chapter 1. V'yasifu anavim ba'adonai simcha ve'evyonei adam b'kadosh Yisrael yagilu. And the poor, anavim, or perhaps the humble, will increase in their happiness in God, in Hashem. And the downtrodden people will rejoice in Kadosh Yisrael, the Holy One of Israel. Ki afes aritz v'chalaleitz v'nichretu kol shokudei aven. Because the oppressors, and here I think the Radak is correct, the oppressors are not Asher, but the leaders of Israel who mistreat the poor and the needy, as described in chapter 1, they will be erased. And the scorners, these are the honey, the honey-tongued plotters and politicos of the previous chapter, they will be destroyed. And those who are quick to misdeeds will be cut off. Machati e Adam Bidavar vilam mochiach bashar yikoshun vayatu batohu tzadik. Continuing with the type of people who will be cut off, those who steer people wrong with their words, and those who lay traps for the teachers at the gates, referring to the prophets like he himself, Yeshayahu, who are harried and mocked, and sometimes even imprisoned and killed if their messages at the gates of the city are seen to be too inflammatory to the powers that be, and those who wrong the righteous with lies and nothingness. One imagines the turbulent dynamic by the gates of the city, the markets and the places of justice, where the nobles sat in power and judgment in both civil and criminal cases, and they took bribes, and they did their wheeling and dealing, and they hatched their plots, and they considered themselves above the law, while the prophets and the moralists preached their own and God's criticisms to the crowds and to the nobles, trying to steer everyone on the proper path. L'chein. Komar Adonai el Beit Yaakov, Asher Padat Avraham, Lo Ata Yevosh Yaakov, Lo Ata Panav Yechevaru. Indeed, so says the Lord to the house of Jacob, the Lord, who is the one who redeemed Avraham. Now, what is the reference to Avraham? If you remember, Avraham was also saved from Mesopotamia, not Ashur, but Babel, or from Sumer, from Samaria. He was saved from the city of Ur of the Chaldeans, Ur Kasdim. It is not by chance that our rabbis understand that incident of the saving of Avraham much like this one. It's a showdown between the king of Mesopotamia and the leader of the future nation of Israel, and Avraham refuses to back down even the face of sure death when he is told that he will be cast into the fire if he does not accept the will and the religion of Mesopotamia, and God saves him miraculously because of his trust. Very much like what's going on here. So getting back to our verse, from now on Jacob will not be embarrassed, and no longer will his face, Yechevaro, will become pale. That is, will become white with shame. Kiver oto yeladav masei yadai bikirbo yakdishu shmi. The syntax here is a little difficult, but I'll try the following. Because he, Yaakov, sees his children, Bnei Yaakov or Bnei Yisrael, the creations of my hand, blessing God's name. Or it could mean when it, the nation, and his children see what I do in their midst, then they will sanctify my name, Yakdishu Shemi. sounds like they'll say Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvaot, Melot Kol Haaretz Kvodo, like Yeshayahu taught us all in chapter 6 of his book. And they will cause to be sanctified the Holy One of Jacob, and they will revere the God of Israel. And this brings back, this brings to mind the rabbi saying that after the fall of Ashur at the gates of Yerushalayim, Chizkiah was supposed to go out with his people to sing of God's miracles and wonders. Finally, on that day, V'yada'u to'e ruach bina v'roganim yilmedu lekach, the wrong spirit will understand, and on that day, the grumblers will learn the lesson.